Hello and welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, a straight dog is nice. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
Welcome, podcast listeners. This is Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx. Thanks for joining me today. We've got a very special show for you on Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Everybody needs a little push. And this episode is entitled, Are We Eating Our Way Through COVID-19? The pushy broad from the Bronx thinks she's eating her way through COVID-19, which is why she has decided to bring an expert on board, not only to give her tips as to how to get a handle on this quarantine 15-pound thing, but also maybe to help you and the people surrounding you not to get this eating thing way out of hand. So one of the most important things to remember, and one of the most important things I've learned, is that according to the eating disorder statistics estimated by the National Eating Disorder Association, in the United States, up to 30 million people suffer from eating disorders. And some of them are serious, like anorexia or bulimia or even binge eating or compulsive eating, which is something that the pushy broad from the Bronx unfortunately suffers from. But worldwide, people suffer from eating disorders to the tune of about 70 million people. And because we are in isolation in COVID-19, this is a very difficult thing for a lot of us. Our eating habits have become more strange than ever before. So COVID-19 is not only triggering current behaviors for individuals who already have an unhealthy relationship with food, but for some of us, it can also contribute new thoughts and new fears about how we look at our body and ourselves. So the pushy broad from the Bronx, Everybody Needs a Little Push, is delighted to introduce Dana Wells today with us. Let me give you a small background on Dana, and it's rather a large one. Dana Wells is a registered dietitian nutritionalist. She's a licensed nutritionalist and licensed professional counselor. She's been in practice since 2006. She specializes in weight management, eating disorders, addiction, trauma, and sports nutrition. To add to her credentials, she has a certification from the American Dietetic Association in adult weight management and also is a certified personal trainer through the National Council of Strength and Fitness. Dana, in private practice, currently consults for intensive outpatient programs on eating disorders, addiction, trauma, depression, and anxiety. I do not know anyone better that is better equipped to talk to us today about how we get a handle on eating through this coronavirus epidemic. The pushy broad from the Bronx welcomes Dana Wells. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Ellen. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. It's very nice for you to be here. We're going to jump right into this because we all want to know that COVID-19 is producing emotional stress. And we are certainly concerned about how it has made us feel emotionally around our food intake. And because we're in an isolated situation, I think that it is really contributing to having us look to food for a comfort situation. Would you say that would be the case?
I would say yes, definitely. I mean, food is a comfort situation in general for individuals, but it's exacerbated by the whole COVID issue between, you know, not having food at certain grocery stores. So that's kind of elevating some disordered thoughts and fears around, you know, not having food, in addition to just, you know, not having a lot of things to do. So we're going to food for comfort and things of that nature, as well as having some fear around having food around the house, but not being able to get to the gym, you know, do our exercise routine, be in our normal routine of working and getting us kind of out of our, you know, out of our heads and So yes, there's a lot of concentration, or you know, that's focused on food right now, I would say, for sure.
Right. So you're saying one of the major things is that people are bored.
People are bored, or they're out of their routine, one or the other, or both, right? So, you know, what do we do when we don't have anything to do? A lot of us watch TV or watch movies. Everyone's doing the Netflix or this, that, and the other. And we're used to sitting down and watching a film on the weekends or what have you, and just having something to eat or having a snack in front of us. But when you're doing that every day, all day, because you're not working, that can contribute into, you know, just like mindless eating, right? Instead of mindful eating.
Well, okay. So you said something very interesting. Mindless eating as opposed to mindful eating. Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things is we're spending a lot of time either, if we are working, we're working from home, we're sitting in front of our computers. Or if kids are, you know, taking class online, which a lot of kids, students around here are, they don't have that criteria of you can't have food in the classroom, right? Or, you know, when we're at the office, we have other people around us and we're mindful of what we have or what we can have. But at home, we can go to the refrigerator, grab something, go back to our computer, go back to our room, go back to our desk, sit in front of the TV and eat without even thinking. I mean, we've all done it, sat down, you know, with a sandwich or some pretzels or what have you, and working on something, right? And we just eat, and all of a sudden it's gone. And we haven't really even thought about what that tasted like, how much we ate, how fast we've eaten it. So all of these things can you know, contribute to disordered eating.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I never thought about it that way. Even though some of us are working from home, it's easier just to jump to the refrigerator and just kind of make that a pastime and not even realize that you've gone through a bag of potato chips or a box of donuts, right? That's mindless eating.
Mm-hmm. And many of my clients that I kind of took a poll this week when I met with my clients about what was the hardest thing. And it was being out of a routine, out of a schedule, not having a plan. So for them, not having that structure and that schedule has been overwhelming, because there's no guideline. Like, this is my lunch break. This is when, you know, I go out and I take 15 minutes, or, you know, for my students, they don't have this designated time to eat, right? So everyone's kind of just in a free-for-all kind of place. Now, on the other side, some of my clients have said in a positive way that now that they have this downtime, they've actually been able to start a routine and start a schedule. So that's been actually a good part of what's been going on. So there's not they've been able to recognize that this is what's going on and actually catch it, recognize their trigger. So there has been some positive things that my clients have been seeing, which has been really great to hear, you know, getting some positive things out of this time of isolation, kind of looking within and kind of really changing or understanding the relationship with food, which I think is really important, which is I'm a firm believer in.
It is. It really is a very good thing. Would you say that maybe in the beginning people were a little less restrictive? You find then that people are kind of getting used to the isolation and the shelter at home, that people are beginning to develop a routine. Do you find that it's going in stages with your clients?
Absolutely. I think the first week, it was kind of a free-for-all, and everyone felt a little bit like they were on vacation. And then what happened was they started feeling like, okay, we need to really kind of get ourselves into a routine, because this is getting out of hand. And then transitioned into, especially with my clients that have been in touch with me, okay, these are the problems that I'm having, and these are the ways that I can change that, whether it's going back to a meal plan, keeping a journal, thinking about, you know, before I go to eat, what is something else that I can do? Am I hungry? And, you know, or am I bored, right? The HALT acronym, which a lot of people in recovery understand, which is hungry, angry, or anxious, lonely, or tired. Which one is it? If I'm not really hungry and I'm these other things, what other things can I do? Can I go for a walk? Can I use a coping skill? Can I learn a different coping skill? So I feel like my clients have been able to recognize them getting a little bit kind of off the walls, if you will, and being able to kind of bring that back in, which has been really great to see, you know, having the opportunity to really look at your triggers and really understand, you know, your relationship with food and why am I really eating?
Right, and really face it. And then, of course, I think because of this virus, we were faced with the fact that it was a matter of deprivation. People were afraid that some of the food groups would not be there. You know, the same way it happens in a storm when we have a hurricane, people go out to the supermarkets, they buy all of the milk and the bread and the eggs and, you know, all of the staples. And now on top of which people are buying, extraordinary things. You know, like I always try not to bring in the cake, candy, and ice cream into my house. But all of a sudden during this quarantine, I'm thinking to myself, I'll never be able to eat cake, candy, and ice cream again. Right. So I'm bringing in 10 times more than I would ever bring, right? I mean, is that did you find that happening? Is that something that occurs?
Yeah. I think especially for individuals that struggle with binge eating, kind of compulsive disorders for sure, you know, and also some of these things are more shelf stable. So people are bringing them in, but I think what we need to recognize is also the other things that are shelf stable are frozen vegetables, some canned vegetables that are, you know, that are healthy choices. And that there is always going to be an opportunity to have those sweets and those things again, and just being able to regulate that, especially if it's a trigger food for you. I tell my clients, if it's a trigger food, don't be bringing it in. Or why not learn a new recipe, or, you know, do some baking. Two of my clients for Easter, instead of bringing in all the peeps and all the jelly beans and all of that, they made carrot cakes and they colored eggs, and then they made, egg salad. So being able to look at this in a different approach and say, well, what are some healthy things that I can do? And what are some different things that we can do with our eating, as opposed to our old coping skills and our old ways.
I understand. Okay. So when we talked about COVID-19 and the isolation, the whole idea of isolation, do you find that some of the people are struggling, are doing the same kind of things that maybe an addict or an alcoholic would do? Maybe just substituting one for the other? We'll talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. In fact, it's very common for individuals in recovery to substitute one addiction for another. And, you know, food is one that we go to, especially during this time. Alcohol and other things are not available, or if somebody is working on their program and working their program and they're not able to get online or not able to go to their groups and not able to get the support that they have, they often will turn to food. And so that can become, you know, an obsessive compulsive, you know, type of activity, the same thing as drugs or alcohol or OCD or any of those things that come along with addiction and mental health. So I think that is a struggle, and we have to be really mindful of our triggers and be careful not to slip into, you know, the fine line, like what is the difference between, you know, disordered eating and an eating disorder. You know, there's a very fine line there, which I think that we have to be mindful of, especially in the individuals in recovery, because food is the next thing, right? And the issue with food is, unlike alcohol or drugs, where we can be abstinent from them, with food, we can't. So we have to really change our relationship with food, as opposed to not just eliminating food or going totally overboard with food, which are the two extremes that can happen.
Right. I understand. Well, you said some very important thing. You said disordered eating versus eating disorder.
Yes.
Can you explain that a little bit more in detail for our listeners?
Sure. So disordered eating would be kind of like we were speaking to earlier, using, food for boredom, eating until, maybe we're overly full, or eating, like we said, in a dissociative kind of way, like not being mindful and eating. Whereas an eating disorder goes to a much more extreme part, where we're either restricting to the point of starvation, eliminating entire food groups, trying to rid ourselves from the food intake that we've taken in by either overeating or over-exercising, using laxatives, things of that nature, or binging and then purging. So, purging or vomiting food in order to get rid of the food that we've taken in. or obsessive overeating to the point where we're actually physically ill, we'll sit down and eat an entire box of cookies, or like you were saying, an entire box of donuts, and eating that until it's completely gone, and then feeling very guilty about that. And then from the guilt, and we all know this cycle, I think, with addiction, you know, you eat, you feel guilty. First you feel good, then you feel guilty, then then that passes, and then the routine starts over again. Then you're eating again, then you're feeling good while you're binging, and then you feel guilty for the binge, and it cycles again. So there's two big extremes there.
Okay, my goodness. Well, it sounds a little bit like me. I know that. Can we talk a little bit about binge eating and compulsive overeating and the differences there? Because many of us do fall into that category. So let's address that a little bit. And what are the signs, the things we have to look for, and maybe some of the things that you've heard from your clients as to what they're doing to help with their situations?
So yeah, the big signs with binge eating, you know, kind of back to sort of what I said, but you know, eating large amounts of food in a really short period of time, feeling the ability not to be able to stop eating, you know, like I just can't stop eating until you feel completely uncomfortably full, like to the point where you're almost feeling sick. With kids, sometimes we see them hiding food, and adults as well. And then feeling kind of distraught or depressed, or embarrassed about how much someone has eaten, even if they're not in front of other people, even just within themselves.
And I'm assuming that now, I understand. And I'm assuming that now the binge eating may also come into play, even if you weren't a binge eater before, but some of the stressors of COVID-19, some of the really emotional things that are going on, right? I mean, I'm sure, do you compare a binge eating and overeating to emotional eating? Is that what people call emotional eating?
Absolutely. Yes. And there's different levels of emotional eating, and kind of what I was saying in terms of eating and for that moment while we're eating, it feels good and we're not thinking about other things. So yes, we're stressed out. You know, also, like you said, with the food insecurities, buying a bunch of things off the shelves that we don't think that we might be able to have. And there's always an emotional component tied to food, for sure. So yes, it can relieve stress in the short term, but then in the long term, cause more stress. And you had said, what are my clients doing in order to, you know, help themselves with that? Interestingly enough, a lot of my clients have said, you know, I've gotten more structure. So I've started to follow a meal plan, which I think is really important. And also being mindful again about their hunger cues and making sure that they're food combining, which is really important, balancing out your blood sugar. So whenever you eat something that breaks down the sugar, whether it's a donut or a potato chip or a starch, any type of carbohydrate or fruit, that's going to bring your blood sugar up. So you really want to make sure that you can balance that with having a protein or a fat to balance out your blood sugar. And if you can do that and food combine properly, it will keep your sugar from spiking. And then also designating times to eat, having, you know, getting up and having a routine, having your breakfast, waiting, you know, about three hours, having a nice healthy food combined snack, having a lunch, waiting 3 or 4 hours again, having a small snack, and then having a healthy dinner. So all of these things, you know, and having a plan and some structure have been helping my clients tremendously through this. And it's also helped them be able to recognize whether they're full or not and their triggers.
That's really something. So, and for some of your clients, maybe, like you said, being able to stay on a structured plan more than ever before, because they now feel that they have the time. There's no excuse anymore.
Yeah, and they're learning a lot about themselves in that, you know, because they're able to sit with themselves and be able to really focus on that, which has been great. You know, there's no excuse. Now, on the other side, then individuals who are restrictors, what we can get to, that's a great excuse not to eat, though, right? I'm too busy.
Okay, let's talk about that for a moment. You say, tell us what restrictors mean, restricting our food intake?
Yeah, so, you know, individuals that struggle with anorexia nervosa, which is the other side of the scale as opposed to binge eating disorder, are individuals that have a kind of a lot of fear of food. They eliminate food groups, kind of what we talked about earlier. And so for them, being busy and you know, having a lot to do, or, you know, needing to take care of this, this and that, they can find themselves, you know, having an excuse of, you know, I don't have to eat, or there's really not going to be a lot of food, maybe in a couple of weeks, so I need to save my food. So the eating disorder brain, right, much like the addict brain, says, no, you don't need to eat right now because you don't know if you're going to be able to get food next week. So you can restrict today.
Okay, okay.
Your foods to very small portions. And, you know, the eating disorder brain is like, it's okay if you skip lunch. It's okay if you skip dinner, right? So their struggle is to kind of be able to reframe that talk, that kind of negative self-talk that says that you don't have to eat now. And their struggle is to make sure that they're following the schedule and routine and, you know, making themselves accountable to eat.
I see. Okay. So the fear of not having enough food can lead to that feeling of I have to hoard it, or I have to put it on the side to make sure I'll have it, you know, down the road in this particular crisis situation, right? I'm not going to have what I need. Okay, so that is anorexia as opposed to bulimia or compulsive overeating, where we're eating a lot, and anorexia is where we're not eating enough, right? For everybody out there. How would somebody that is a restrictor be able to get healthy around it and make a schedule that will work for them?
I think it's very similar, but just in the opposite way. With you know, whether you're overeating or undereating, it's about being, you know, taking accountability, making a schedule, and challenging yourself to say, you know, I need to follow my plan in the appropriate way and not make excuses, and be able to say to myself, am I really skipping a meal because I'm saving on food, or am I skipping a meal because my eating disorder brain is telling me that it's okay to not eat because you might not be able to get groceries next week? So it's, again, being, you know, looking inside, being mindful, knowing that you have a plan, and being accountable to follow that. And when you find yourself going to the refrigerator and you know, saying, oh, well, you know, there's not that much, or I don't really feel like eating right now, being able to say, this is the time and this is the schedule that I said that I was going to eat, and therefore I need to have something, anything, you know, as opposed to nothing at all. So it's kind of the same thing, being able to be accountable and mindful about why are you doing that behavior, and what's really behind that.
So what you're saying, of course, is that we should keep to a schedule so that we can follow it in a way that is healthy no matter what. So then from what you said, you are a fan, as a nutritionist and a dietitian, you are a fan of 3 full meals a day, for those of us out there, a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner at specific times of the day. Is that what you pass on to your clients? And can you talk a little bit more about that schedule?
Yes, I am a fan of that for several different reasons. One, as I spoke about, from a totally metabolic standpoint, the reason that we get hungry is because our blood sugar gets low. If we take out all of the emotions, everything around food, food provides us with nourishment and provides us with energy. And when we don't have it, our body's going to respond in certain ways, whether, you know, we get dizzy and cranky and don't feel well, right? Or if we have too much, we kind of feel like get that crash later on in the afternoon. Those are the things that we don't want to be happening throughout the day. So I do believe in having balanced meals in order to avoid those. Because think about, if we say, okay, we get up in the morning, I'm not going to eat, and then it gets to maybe 4 o'clock. Now your blood sugar is low. Now when you go to eat, 9 times out of 10, depending on where you are, if you're in an eating disorder phase, but the normal individual is going to inevitably overeat because their blood sugar is so low and their body's going to want more, right? So they're going to overeat, and then they're probably not going to eat for a long time, and then it's going to be another big meal again. And the body loves consistency. Over and over again, ever since I've started doing this, that's one thing that I know, is the body likes consistency. So if we can be consistent and be accountable, and, you know, eat, you know, our meals throughout the day, that's going to help. Now, some people do say that they do better with 3 meals and they don't like the snacks in between. I do, you know, I try to meet every client where they're at. And I think it's important that, you know, some people, you know, don't believe in snacking. I think it's important because there's always that lull with our blood sugar. So, you know, for my clients, I always have a snack. The PM snack or the snack after dinner is optional depending on the client.
So is everybody's blood sugar different in terms of maintenance? Is there a range that would be healthy for us?
Well, sure. I mean, if we're talking about the normal individual without type 1 or 2 diabetes, but in general, yes, all our bodies need different types of energy depending on our age, how tall we are, our weight, right? How active we are. So it's going to be different for every individual, but the concept of making sure that whenever you have something that breaks down the sugar, whether it's a starch / carbohydrate or a fruit, you know, pairing that with either a protein or a fat is universal for everyone. That's something that everybody should be doing in order to stabilize their blood sugar. And again, if you're a type 1 or type 2 diabetic, that would be a much finer put together meal plan for them specifically for type 1 and type 2 diabetes that would also work with their insulin. But in general, yes, for everyone, we need to be mindful of that.
So is this a majority of your clients? I know you work a great deal with eating disorder. Are most of your clients eating disorder clients?
Most of my clients are eating disorder clients, but I have a lot of clients that are overweight with complicated issues, such as type 2 diabetes. I also have a lot of clients that come to see me that want to gain weight because they are in their sport. I also have a lot of young teens that are actually having some disordered eating because of their sport. And need to figure out how to eat for their sport. So, you know, I see a variety of clients, but the large bulk of it is eating disorder and disordered eating. But I have a good amount of clients that just come to see me for, you know, meal plans and just behavioral patterns as well.
Okay. And at this time, especially with what's going on, could you tell our listeners how to find you?
Sure. So you can find me on my email, which is RD as in registered dietitian at anu, which is spelled A-N-U-E online.com. So that's RD at anuonline.com. Or you can find me on my website, which is just anuonline.com. So that would be A-N-U-E online.com. You can find me either one of those places, send me a message. You'll see my contact information there as well. So, yeah.
Terrific. And I will be putting Dana's information on Transformation Talk Radio in under Ellen Stewart as a host. And you'll be able to get that information, or you can email me at Ellen@pushybroadfromthebronx, and I will be happy to give you Dana's information. All right, let's go on a little bit and let's talk about, let's just go a little bit more in depth about some of the serious things and some of the serious eating disorders that people really do have to be mindful of, especially during this time. If you're at home with somebody and you're noticing things that you haven't noticed before, or you're seeing something in your children, or you're seeing something in yourself. So the two very difficult things, I know we've talked a little bit about it before, but I want to talk about the signs and the symptoms of what somebody with anorexia would look like and somebody that is about to binge eat would look like. So in terms of anorexia, give us a list of some of the symptoms that would follow this disease.
So some of the symptoms would be, like I had said before, eating smaller portions of food, starting to eliminate food groups, okay? Starting random different types of diets, like all of a sudden becoming a vegetarian, or, you know, for not really any ethical reasons, but just especially with kids, you know, sometimes they experiment and that's fine. Or someone going on, you know, a celiac, you know, free, like a gluten-free diet without any diagnosis of having celiac or any type of gluten sensitivity, extreme weight loss to the point where they're starting to hide themselves. So wearing baggy clothes, a lot of kids do wear baggy clothes these days, but, you know, all of a sudden your teen is dressing or, you see people dressing with baggy clothes not starting to fit right. Having anxiety around food is a big thing. So either, you know, people start feeling uncomfortable being around food or being around at the table wanting to eat, leaving the room, playing with food, so kind of pushing food around the plate, but not really eating it. And then avoiding meal times just altogether, and obsessively weighing themselves. So, going to the scale over and over and over again. If you find yourself being like that, like at first, you're weighing yourself once a day, then it's twice a day, then it's three times a day, and feeling anxious about, food. All of these are things that you need to be concerned about.
Yes, of course. And I would think that if you are the type of person, like you said before, that goes out and does activity, especially kids that have sports and all of these things, and now are at home and confined, everybody's worried about what they're going to look like. Their outward appearance is extremely important, and everybody's afraid when they're going to emerge from the end of this isolation, what are we going to look like? I talked last week about being a little grayer and maybe a little fatter or a little thinner, but we really, in some instances, have to worry about whether or not this was an obsession for us, how we look when we come out of this.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is a very big fear. And what I've said to my clients, especially a lot of my teens and my kiddos that are, not out in the field and cheering this, that, is that, remember when you were eating for sport, remember how active you were. And so if you're taking that away, you don't need to take away all of the food, right? You need to take away the food that you were eating in order to help expend more energy. So what we did was we just transitioned their meal plan into, a little bit less, but not completely nothing, because there is that fear, right? I'm going to lose my body mass. I'm going to lose my muscle mass. And also encouraging, my kids and my parents, you can still be active. There's so many things that we can do. I know actually some dance classes are online now. There are so many things on YouTube. There is the opportunity now to go out and walk. You can work out at home without having weights or anything like that. There's so many options online right now. So we don't have to necessarily be sedentary. It is in some ways a little bit of a choice. I know people are very nervous about going out and being out, around a lot of people, especially probably in the inner cities. But if you can take a ride and find somewhere private and put a mask on or work out in your home, I've been doing yoga in my home with an individual that's doing, like a Zoom yoga. And there's a lot of that right now, and they're doing it free, which I thought was really great. So you might be able to find that in your local area or just online.
That's right. Exactly. There are many YouTube free things to get your body moving and so that you can balance yourself out and you don't have to feel that you're constantly training for something, so that your food intake has to match that. And
absolutely.
I understand that. Okay. All right. So those are some of the things that someone would look for. So if someone's beginning to see those dangerous signs, either in themselves or others, in this particular time during the virus, what can they do about it?
Well, I advise them, one, to talk to a friend or talk to their parents, or if the parents see, their kids behaving in this way, have a conversation about it. The biggest thing is, and in any eating disorder or any addiction, the worst thing is the isolation, the sense of feeling alone. So reaching out, right? Even if it's to a support group, make sure that you are looking for a reputable, site to help support you, and or find a dietitian in your area. I'm seeing clients right now, so reaching out for help in that way. And also recognizing that you might need to look really into what's causing the anxiety and being able to start treating the anxiety as well. So I think the most important thing is recognizing the signs, reaching out for help, and being self-aware that it's happening.
Right. And at least having people that may be watching it, because you're right on top of somebody, because you're there all the time, really noticing it and not shoving it under the rug and not saying, well, I'm sure it'll pass based on just this particular instance.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, because it may be something that could be festering and could become a habit that's unhealthy. And as you said, Dana, you are taking on clients. And of course, during COVID-19, you're seeing people virtually. So that means anybody has the opportunity to see you virtually from wherever they live, including parents that are looking for questions and looking for answers.
Yes.
That's a really good thing. Okay. All right. So if somebody is exhibiting signs of bulimia, tell us a little bit about what that disease is and how it manifests itself.
So bulimia in general is purging the calories that we've taken in, and purging, or the word purging, can be anywhere from over-exercising to making yourself vomit, to using laxatives, to using drugs, diet pills, things of that nature. A lot of times individuals who do have bulimia can overeat and purge, will undereat and purge, will go through for a certain amount of period without eating and then eating a very large amount of food, much like a binge eating disorder, and then either throw it up or overexercise or use a laxative to get rid of that. And bulimia, the signs that you can see with that, one of the biggies is just, someone getting up from dinner and being in the bathroom for a long period of time. That's one of the biggies. Some individuals get really good at it, and they'll hide, and they might vomit in a bag and then hide the bags, or they might go outside and go for a run and be, your teenager goes from being out for like a half an hour to being out for an hour and a half. They wake up, they're doing sit-ups in their room, then they're running, then, they're doing a video late at night. So extreme exercise, like over exercising. And then when they can't exercise, like you tell them to sit at the table, or they get really anxious, so anxious that they can't, they have to be moving. So there's a lot of anxiety around all of the eating disorders and the disordered eating. But this one in particular, to make an individual just sit still with that feeling of fullness is very anxiety provoking from that. So you're going to see a lot of anxiety around not being able to just sit after eating a meal.
In one place. I understand. So both anorexia and bulimia are pretty serious eating disorders. And
Absolutely.
Can result in life or death situations. And that's
Absolutely.
Important for our listeners to know, right?
Yes. And it's important to know that with bulimia, you could be of normal weight. Anorexia, you can see a lot of what's going on physically from the outside with an individual with anorexia, because they become, at the serious end of the spectrum, they're, individuals emaciated. So, a lot of times they need to be hospitalized because they're so underweight and so malnourished. But an individual with bulimia, they can be doing so much damage to their insides, especially when they're throwing up. All of the acid that comes up from their stomach can rot their teeth. It can cause esophageal cancer and all sorts of other medical issues that we could talk about a whole show by itself. But yes, very serious. And again, I just want to reiterate that you can be of a healthy or normal weight, or a little bit overweight, or a little bit of underweight, and have bulimia. So, it's not exclusive to a particular weight like anorexia or binge eating disorder is.
I understand. I see. Well, that's very good for us to know. All right. So, let's just tell everybody again how and where they can find you.
They can find me at rd@anewonline.com, which is my email. So that's registereddietitian@anueonline.com, or they can go to my website, which is anueonline.com or anueonline.com, and they can just look up Dana Wells, Bucks County.
All right, so now let's look at some of the things that most of us deal with all the time. I want to go back to all of the questions that people ask me all the time and the things that I suffer with, and that's the binge eating or compulsive eating. And you've talked a little bit about that. You've talked about the inability to stop eating when full, about eating large amounts of foods in a short period of time. I know you talked about that. And also in isolation, many of us are by ourselves. And I think in this time, this kind of food intake provides us with some kind of nurturing situation. Yes, we want to feel comforted by food, which is what you mentioned before. So tell me what you think some of the things that we can do to actually help with the binge eating, and maybe talk a little bit about why you think binge eating, you know, tell us a little bit about why we binge eat. What are your theories around that?
Well, I think loneliness, like you said, is a big one. You know, food definitely does keep individuals gives them comfort. Also, there is a part of oneself that when we are eating, it allows us to focus on other things. So in the time that we're binging, we're taking away that stress. We're focusing on something else, like, oh, we're intaking food. And so there is a level of when we're taking in this much food that it is providing us with comfort from a mental, emotional, psychological aspect. And think about food is used to celebrate almost everything. And when we go on vacation, what do? We eat. And so this feels like, especially the first week, like you were saying, to a lot of people, it felt like we were on vacation. And so, we have this relationship with food that it makes us feel better for all sorts of different reasons. You know, when you were sick, your mom would bring you soup, right? So I think that there's a huge emotional component for that. And what we need to realize is that we can have a different relationship and a healthier relationship and use food not as something that provides us comfort, but being able to recognize that we can use food as something that's giving us energy and providing the nutrients that we need and use other things for comfort. Yes, the isolation is a big part. I think one of the things I have several individuals, in fact, for the Easter holiday, having family Skype or Zoom and eating with each other, right? We can't get out, but that doesn't mean we can't reach out, which again is something that I always say is so important, reaching out. If we are sitting home alone, my friend and I made like this silly recipe with all of this weird stuff that we had in the house because, we're just trying to make new things and learn to make new things. And that was really fun. And then we sat down and we had dinner together. So I think it's important for us to reach out to friends and do some social activities online. We're so blessed that we have things like Skype and Zoom and FaceTime to be able to take advantage of that. And again, be able to recognize, why am I eating, right? And why am I not stopping eating? That's very important, right? What is it about it that I can't stop?
What do you see as some of the reasons why people say they can't stop eating?
It depends upon the level of where they are with their eating disorder, but a lot of individuals, like I said, they just dissociate and they just are totally focused on something else. The other thing, like you had said, they get something in the house, they don't think they're ever, it's going to be like the last time. Whether it's, I'm going to go on a diet tomorrow, which I don't even believe in dieting, but it's just today, I'm just going to eat this because it's going to be my last donut or my last this, that, or the other thing. And so they end up eating an exorbitant amount of it because this is something that I'm not going to be able to have, which I think we really need to, again, rethink our relationship and reframe our relationship with food. When we eliminate things, we are going to act in those behaviors, as opposed to saying, no, I'm going to choose not to have this right now, but I can't have it when I want to. I'm just going to have it within the structure of a meal plan. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So we don't feel deprived, right? We don't feel deprived of something. And we can turn around and say, it's not that we can never have this forever. We right. just are not, we're not thinking about this at this moment because it's not serving us. It's not healthy for us now.
Right. Everything in moderation.
Everything in moderation. Well, so you mean that I can have that donut, but I can't just eat donuts, right?
Exactly. And in the beginning, I think especially for people that struggle with, like you said, getting out of control, binge eating disorder, it is a good idea to maybe not have your trigger foods in the house. So if you know that Chips Ahoy, or just forget about it. I bring Chips Ahoy in the house, it's the end of the world. But if I bring an oatmeal cookie in the house, that's not as triggering for me. So being able to find the snacks that maybe aren't as triggering, and so you're having something that you can enjoy. My clients that love like the big chocolate bars, we kind of say, well, how about a couple Hershey Kisses after dinner? And a lot of times that with a little bit of peanut butter actually reduces cravings. So we try to rework what that treat really looks like, if that makes sense.
No, I understand. I absolutely understand it. And I found that after the first week or so, then I bought the family size box of chips and realized that it's only me. I don't need a family size box of anything.
Right.
Once that was over, I said, okay, I'm just going to have the tiny bag rather than, mm-hmm. The big family size stuff. But you understand that. And the other thing is, I think for a binge eater, for a compulsive eater, sometimes we always think that we have a better handle on it than we think we do. And I think that's something that that people out there need to hear. You have to know what your limitations are. You can't bring in the family size bag of chips if you know you're going to go right through it. Like you
Absolutely.
Said. You have to bring in something that you're not attractive to in such an addictive and compulsive way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I'm a big fan of chocolate chip cookies, what you're saying is bringing in the oatmeal cookies because I'm not such a big fan. And so I maybe won't look to eat it as much and as often as I would look to eat something that I really wanted.
And if you find that you are a compulsive eater and you do tend to binge, there's, simple little things. Don't, if you are going to work in front of the computer, for example, I know you're very busy. I'm in front of the computer a lot with my clients or what have you. Going to the kitchen, getting the amount that you're supposed to have, right? Whatever is in your plan that you planned, and bringing that to where you are and finishing that, and not going back. So portioning things out. Don't bring the whole bag into the room. Sitting at the table and making that an event, having a meal. Finishing in a meal and then going to watch a movie. I've been telling a lot of my families, dinner and a movie, sit down and have dinner. And surprisingly enough, what some of my teens have told me is that this has actually decreased some of their anxiety because they don't have so much school going on and they're actually, enjoying time with their parents and they're actually eating together and trying things that they normally wouldn't have. And enjoying family time. So, sit down, eat. This is an opportunity for us to sit down and eat with our families, whether it's on Skype or not, at home. Evidence-based research from the American Dietetic Association over and over and over again says that families eat together, have better eating habits, model for your kids, and show them what healthy eating looks like. So I think that's very important too. If you're going to watch a movie, have dinner first, be semi-satiated as opposed to, feeling a fullness as opposed to sitting down in front of TV with the pizza and eating dinner, watching the movie, if that makes sense.
So yes, concentrating and making eating a separate thing while you're sitting at a table, you're concentrating on food. That's the place to eat rather than concentrating on food and something else. Because when you're Absolutely. Concentrating on something else, then you're not really conscious of how much food you're consuming. Okay.
And that's the biggest thing for people with binge eating disorder and overeating is that they go to another place. They're not even thinking. It's just mindless. So another way that you can mindfully eat is chew your food. Chew your food. A couple things that will happen when you do that. Number one, if you really are paying attention to what you're chewing, you're tasting the food. Number two, it takes you longer to eat that food, which means that you're actually going to get in touch with that hunger cue. So if I sit down and I eat an entire meal in 7 minutes, my blood sugar hasn't even had time to really regulate. And all of a sudden I'm I'm done. And it's like, oh, but if I sit down and I take 20 minutes to a half an hour to enjoy my food, to chew my food, to digest my food, to taste my food, come 20 minutes into it, I will start feeling full. So that's something that I think is an important lesson that I try to have my clients think about, what is this word mindful? Mindful eating, thinking about chewing your food. Are you hydrated? Taking a break, having a drink of water in between your meal, and making that last and really making that the event as opposed to sitting down with a plate of food and watching a movie.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about some more ways. I know you give us a lot of healthy ways to manage our food intake during all of these stay-at-home directives. And you talk very seriously about keeping a schedule and setting mm-hmm. times to eat. Do you have a specific amount of time between meals that you're advocating, like between breakfast and lunch and between lunch and dinner?
Yeah, I like 3 to 4 hours. a lot of my clients, if they're getting up later, they might skip that lunch and do breakfast, you know, lunch and snack and dinner, you know, and you can usually we kind of set up the meal plans and it just adjusts to your time when you get up. But every three to four hours.
Every 3 to 4 hours. And do you also advocate not eating past a certain time at night?
Well, I have a lot of individuals that work, you know, night shift. So my particular philosophy is not to eat 2 hours before you're going to bed, right? The whole idea of rest and sleep is to repair and regenerate. And so if we're digesting food while we're sleeping, then the body isn't working on the other things that it needs to do. So as a general rule, and again, this is for general, you know, not someone with diabetes, like just the general population. I try to say, if you know you're going to bed at midnight, have a little, you know, and you normally by midnight you're hungry, you know, I would back it up and have a little something at 10, you know, something light, something that, you know, is a little bit more easily digestible. I mean, I wouldn't have, you know, like a raw vegetable and a big, you know, something kind of just, you know, something light, like a chip with some hummus, or, you know, some of my clients like to do, you know, the little, the fruit pops or something like that, you know, something that's a little bit on the lighter side.
Light side. Okay. All right. Then you always said you advocate eating balanced meals, which includes a minimum of protein with a grain or fruit, a healthy fat and a vegetable. I know you mentioned that. And you also avoid grazing throughout the day, but you do advocate in some ways one or two well-timed snacks, correct? In the course of the day.
Yeah. And those snacks would be balanced. So, you know, like I said, whenever you're eating something that breaks down the sugar, so a protein or a fruit or a starch, you would eat a fat or a protein. So an apple with cheese, almonds with a banana, crackers with cheese, peanut butter and crackers, something like that.
And also you're advertising, of course, staying hydrated, right? You tell me that we often confuse thirst for hunger.
Absolutely. You know, and you see this a lot with athletes, but you also see this a lot with people that sit around all day and drink coffee, right? I drink decaf, but still, a lot of times when we're dehydrated, we don't realize that our body is really asking for electrolytes and hydration. So make sure that you're drinking some water throughout the day and hydrating with every meal, because often sometimes we'll be eating and eating. What we really need is we need to be hydrated.
Instead. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you said to me, if I am suffering from a little bit of binge or overeating, that instead of taking the whole bag of potato chips with me over to my desk, I should just take a handful of them and then just sit at my desk and just eat them and then just not take the whole thing. Not the whole tub of ice cream, just a scoop.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And to sit and eat meals with the family, meaning it should be almost like a ritual. Reconnect, especially at this time, right? Get involved in the meal planning, not texting on our phone, not watching TV, but just strictly eating, which is great. And one of the things that you do, if you're living on your own or if you're by yourself that evening, to actually Skype or Zoom a friend and have fun and have dinner with them as you're discussing your evening, right? Making a thing out of it as if you were sitting in a restaurant with them.
And there's also nothing wrong with just sitting and you know, a lot of times we just have problems like just being, right? What is wrong with sitting and just making yourself a nice meal and enjoying it by yourself? You know, maybe exploring that. What does that feel like? What does it feel like to just sit and be? And if I do, if things come up, I'm feeling lonely or I'm feeling, you know, anxious or any, write that down and think about what's the feelings underneath that and really exploring that, right? And so you can kind of just really think about why my behaviors are the way that they are, right? And what is that emotional piece and what belongs to that, right? Is it loneliness? Is it anxiety? Is it, you know, boredom? What does that look like? We could do a whole show on that too.
Emotional eating is a big thing, but at least now during this time, it has given us the opportunity to be more consciously aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it, because we have ourselves to answer to, and we do have the time to do that right now. And then, of course, you mentioned taking the time to learn how to cook or to teach loved ones how to cook. And I think, you know, as we said in conclusion here, that what you're trying to say is that every meal is a new opportunity to change your thinking, correct?
Absolutely. That was something that I was going to, you just got it. I was going to end with that, you know, listen, these are emotional times and these are stressful times. And we're all, you know, we're all in this together, but at the same time, we all are in it alone, right? It is a very isolating feeling. And that, you know, the mistakes are going to happen. We are going to go and maybe binge or take that, you know, take that pizza and put it in front of the, you know, TV and just eat or stress eat and what have you. But that doesn't mean that we have to have this mentality like, oh, I totally, you know, messed up and I'll start tomorrow. No, like I'll start later today, you know? So I had a whole pizza, you know, for lunch. I'm going to have a sensible dinner, right? I'm still going to have my afternoon, you know, snack if I need that. Because there's always an opportunity to reboot our mind and our emotional state. And it doesn't have to wait until like next week or the weekend or the following day. It can be, you know, that time. And a lot of my clients actually sometimes reach out to me and just send me a text like, having a rough time, you know, just, you know, put it out there, you know, a quick email. You don't even have to respond, just holding myself accountable and then just carry on with your day, right? We're so hard on ourselves all the time, right? And especially during this time when we're in isolation, it's so easy to beat ourselves up. So I think, you know, being kind to yourself is so important and knowing that there's always an opportunity to improve things, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours from now.
You've given us so many wonderful things to be aware of today. Please just let's give our audience one final message. What would you really like them to take away with today?
I think the biggest thing is I want everyone to understand that this is a tough time for everyone. I think that we're all under a lot of emotional stress. And food can be used in a healthy way or in an unhealthy way. And I think that if we can reframe our thinking around food and improve our relationship with food and really understand how we look at food and be able to reframe that, we can actually use this time to really learn something about ourselves and really improve our eating habits in a healthy way.
Well, I have certainly learned a great deal, and I know what to do and exactly what not to do, and I certainly have a wonderful colleague in Dana Wells to keep me on track. Thank you so much, Dana. We really appreciate it. We will certainly have you back. It has been my pleasure speaking with you today. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening, and remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.